The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. International Overdose Awareness Day is observed every year on August 31st. It's what we're going to talk about on today's show. Now, in preparing for this show, I've had the great good fortune to interview some amazing people, harm reduction activists and advocates, genuine heroes. We'll be hearing from them over the next couple of weeks, in fact. So let's get started.
My name is Lil Prosperino. I use the they, them, theirs pronouns. I'm the Southern States Regional Organizer for the National Harm Reduction Coalition, and I live in West Virginia.
Although, could you tell me about the harm reduction, the National Harm Reduction Coalition?
Sure. Yeah, we are a couple decades old organization who does, support and technical assistance and mobilization around harm reduction, supporting, harm reduction programs and advocacy and policy efforts. So everything from, supporting so-called syringe exchange programs, or, now people call them syringe service programs or SSPs, and, other types of programs, more community-based organizations, organizations who are operating in areas where harm reduction is still criminalized. We support harm reduction efforts across the U.S.
So now you're the Southern States Regional Organizer. Forgive me, but the regional stereotype, Southern States, at least my impression would be that that's one of those regions where it's harm reduction's not really received in a friendly way. If you could disabuse me of that, or reaffirm it, what's it like? Tell me about your work.
It's true that harm reduction is pretty deeply contested in the South. I think you can't ever paint one area with a broad brush, and so that's what I always try to remind people. Like, I think the other side of the South being treated like the most hostile ground for harm reduction is it kind of erases some of the struggles in, say, California, where there's a lot of, advancement in harm reduction, but there's also still, NIMBYism in California. There's still programs getting shut down in California. The reason I bring up California is just to say that, like, harm reduction policy is not like a red state, blue state thing. It's more complicated than that,
Oh, indeed. I mean, one of the states in the news that's where harm reduction has been under attack is New Jersey, closing down a syringe service program there. And it's not a, you're right, it's not a North-South thing, absolutely. Like I said, thank you. That's important. So now, August 31st is International Overdose Awareness Day. Can you tell me a little bit about that? What kind of plans does the National Harm Reduction Coalition have around that?
Well, the thing about, the unfortunate, or I don't want to say it's unfortunate because I think it's the responsible decision, but right now NHRC is almost, not entirely, we have some in-person programs, we have two offices and things like that, but we're mostly remote, so we're not gathering, so we're not hosting like any big overdose awareness day events in person. but we are certainly amplifying Overdose Awareness Day events across the country, and we'll have, you know, some virtual, we've already had some virtual like webinars, and there was a really beautiful session on grief led by the Dope Project out of San Francisco. And there's going to be some more events like that that are virtual. As far as in my personal life in West Virginia, we're having some in-person Overdose Awareness Day events this weekend. And then also something that happens around West Virginia every year is Save a Life Day, where there's a day where it's like a big volunteer effort, you know, to just give out lots and lots of naloxone. So there's some things happening kind of like around me, but that in nationally, you know, we're not having our conference this year or anything. We're just not gathering in person just yet, especially not with the Delta variant, you know. Kind of just put a wrench in any of that, unfortunately.
What have I not asked you? What did I should be asking you? What is there a question that you think I should ask that I haven't gotten to yet?
Well, let's see. You asked about safe supply. You asked about decrim. You asked about naloxone, the overdose crisis. You asked about safe consumption sites. Yeah, you hit on a lot of the drug policy initiatives that we are nowhere near, but would love to see and fight for, and just need. What else do I think we need? I think, depending on where you are, there are just boatloads of people who are not being reached by harm reduction services, whether that be people who live in camps of homeless people or undocumented people, or maybe the Black community's not accessing harm reduction services in the area. Maybe you're not reaching the sex worker community or trans women, you know. Maybe, you know, there's just maybe your program is missing opportunity to connect with stimulant users. You know, there's so many different examples of this, right? But I think something that we kind of touched on in all your questions, but didn't name explicitly, is like the only way that folks from, you know, whatever group of people are going to be included or represented or present at your, you know, harm reduction program is if you're reaching them, you know, you're, it's not, and that's why I said earlier about like digging beyond inclusion, but striving for centering. So I think one of the biggest sort of like principles of harm reduction is this constant assessing of like who's in the room, right? And like who's not in the room, and why is that, and how do we address that and be better harm reductionists? You know, without that kind of like constant effort to center the people who need your services the most, and who are not receiving them, you know, you're kind of just, you're losing sight of something really important in harm reduction.
That was from my conversation with Lil Prosperino, a harm reduction activist and the Southern States regional organizer for the National Harm Reduction Coalition. They're on the web at harmreduction.org. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh.
My name is Avi Ojeved. I am a person who has lived experience with drug use, and I have turned that into both an activist and human services career. I'm a member of Portland Drug User Union, which is an advocacy group around the public health needs and civil liberties of people who use drugs. And I'm also a peer support worker at a needle exchange program. I have done work in terms of decriminalization in the drug policy world. And that is kind of the world in which I do the most of my work and advocacy.
Let's start because looking at the calendar, let's start with August 31st. That's International Overdose Awareness Day. Can you tell me a little bit about the day?
Yeah, I mean, overdose awareness means different things to different people, but in the harm reduction world, it really is a time for collectively grieving the people that we have lost in our community to preventable death. It is a time to both mourn people that we have lost and try to use action to drive forward policy and community care that will prevent us from losing more people in a preventable manner in the future. So this is a time when you'll see a lot of harm reduction organizations, a lot of drug policy reform advocates really calling attention to the parts of the overdose crisis and kind of the perpetrators on a systemic level of the overdose crisis that do not get their day in court in our society because there's such a stigma against drugs and the people who use them that takes all of the focus and some of the biggest causes for overdose on the scale that we're seeing it are really not addressed. So for me and people who work in the organizations and the movement that is harm reduction, this is really a day to, as my mentor has put it, grieve with our boots on the ground and use a part of collective mourning for us is basically a call to action to our community to protect us on a community level, on a systemic level. So that's what the day means to me is that I've lost quite a lot of people to the overdose crisis. And this is a chance for me to speak out about what I think it takes to stop that onslaught of death.
And I think this is as good a segue as any to ask you about the Portland Drug Users Union. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so drug users unions have decades of history in the U.S. and internationally. They are advocacy groups formed by people who use drugs. Some of the members identify as former drug users. They once used stigmatized or criminalized drugs, and some of us identify as active drug users, and the voting members of the union are active drug users because we are the most impacted by the policy that we're trying to influence and the conditions we're trying to influence. Basically, what we do is we find that there's a through line of issues that affect all people who use substances that face stigma and criminalization in this country. We're all affected by inadequate drug policy. We're all affected by stigma and prohibition and unsafe supply and disparities in access to medical care, being put through the criminal justice system. So there's like a host of issues that affect any person who uses certain substances, whether they have, you know, the most stereotypically healthy relationship to those substances or the most stereotypically chaotic or unhealthy relationship to them. And we find that the way that we use drugs and our health is very impacted by our environment and systems around us. So a drug users union allows us, like any other citizen group, to come together and really elevate our voices about the things that affect us. For example, a drug users union can go into a hospital and demand equal access to wound care without stigma or denigration by staff. We can advocate for decriminalization. We can advocate for things like safe consumption spaces. In states where needle exchange programs have been illegal, despite them being a very crucial public health and just human rights intervention, harm reduction groups, including drug user unions, have gotten together and just started their own needle exchanges, making sure that people have sterile supplies and safe spaces to use drugs. So really, drug user unions combine like above board, like policy, for example, just speaking out in task forces and supporting certain legislation and making demands of local governments. And they also combine that with just on the ground activism, showing up for one another, protecting one another, carrying Narcan, reversing overdoses, just showing up for our community in any way that we can, kind of in the face of those inhumane drug laws.
Is there an event planned for the Portland area for August 31st, which is, of course, International Overdose Awareness Day?
Yes, there is a committee within the Drug User Union that is planning a public event or demonstration or community event where they're still working out all of the things that are going to happen. But we do have social media. We have a Facebook page for Portland Drug User Union or PDX Users Union. We have an Instagram, and we will be posting more information about what will be happening on and around Overdose Awareness Day as we finalize those plans. But otherwise, what I kind of want to say to people in Oregon in general is to just support needle exchange programs, support safe consumption sites, support harm reduction interventions, and read up on what that means. And that is kind of the best way that we can honor the people that we've lost is resource access and human dignity. And as our union gears up, as our union kind of becomes more established and plans more, we will have more and more public-facing events. We are new this year. We are very much still getting organized, but we are very excited to join the like already very dynamic harm reduction movement in Oregon and kind of make a big space and a big platform for active drug users to speak on what we're going through.
I'm excited to know that you're that you're organizing, and I'm yeah. I just wish all the luck in the world. Say once again the how to find if there is a website or just the Facebook.
Yeah, so we do not have a website yet, and on Facebook there is the Portland People's Outreach Project Facebook page, and PPOP, Portland People's Outreach Project, is the group that initially started, like got the Drug User Union off the ground. So if you visit the Portland People's Outreach Project Facebook page, they post all of the Drug User Union flyers and events on that page. And we're also developing just a specific Facebook page and Instagram for the union, but that the Portland People's Outreach Project Facebook page is probably the best place to receive that information.
That was from a conversation with Avi Yocheved, a harm reduction activist and member of the Portland Drug User Union. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh.
My name is Rhea Sinas. I am the co-founder of the Academy of Perinatal Harm Reduction. I live in Portland, Oregon. I am a harm reduction advocate and a drug war survivor. I work in syringe access. I work at a local syringe exchange program and drug user health clinic here in Portland, Oregon. And I've been working in harm reduction and drug user organizing in some capacity for over a decade. I'm always happy to talk about anything harm reduction related. My area of expertise and of interest really is in perinatal harm reduction or reproductive harm reduction, gender specific services, some of like working with some of the most marginalized drug users, predominantly injection drug users.
Let's talk about August 31st, International Overdose Awareness Day. Tell me a little bit about that.
I think, you know, since fentanyl has sort of tainted the supply, you know, we've lost, you know, all of the old guard. So many of the like founders and you know, big people within our movement, you know, have been lost. And I think sort of to gain, I'm not entirely sure where the origin of the day came from, exactly, but over the last, I don't know, it's been some years. We've just sort of highlighted globally this day to sort of memorialize and like take pause for our comrades, and not just the people within the movement, but everyone, because it seems like everybody's lost or knows at least one person who's been lost to drug poisoning. I don't really like to call it overdose because I think it's has more to do with the poisoning in the supply. I think a lot of people have died unintentionally, not because they've taken more of a substance than they wanted to, but because they took exactly what they thought the same amount that they had been taking, thinking that it was a specific drug that they were ingesting, and it actually turned out to be poisoned with some other you know, fentanyl or some other analog. And so I like to try to reframe like the conversation within that context. So it gets people thinking about like safe supply and like, you know, and sort of black markets and how, you know, the criminalization of drugs really has created this this downward spiral of death when it comes to opiate use. But anyways, I digress. So it's just kind of a day for people to get together and, you know, remember people who they've lost, loved ones that they've lost, friends they've lost, and also bring attention to the fact that, you know, more people are dying. And especially now with COVID, you know, overdose rates or poisoning rates are higher than they've ever been. And so we have, you know, a syndemic going on, I think, which if you talk to a lot of harm reduction advocates, when the pandemic, you know, initially began, I think most of us were anticipating that this would happen just because of isolation and, you know, increase in use all over. And also people like at the exchange I work at, you know, there are people who were in remission from substance use for a really long time and then found themselves using again after, you know, long periods of abstinence.
Tell me about the Academy of Perinatal Harm Reduction.
Academy of Perinatal Harm Reduction is an organization. We're a for-profit benefit company based out of Portland here. It's myself and two colleagues and dearest, closest friends, Erica Goyer, who is a parent advocate and has done a lot of work around advocacy, working with kids with special needs and hospital systems and health information, public health messaging, and Joelle Puccio, who is currently a traveling NICU nurse, who her and I began working together at a syringe exchange, well, syringe access program in Seattle, Washington, over a decade ago, and we developed a Women's Day program there, just sort of the three of us began working. Joelle started writing policy for a hospital that she was working at in Seattle, and met Erica at a conference around some legislation that was being passed at the time around autonomy and substance use in pregnancy. And I actually was pregnant, and my daughter, due to a series of really unfortunate circumstances, I had relapsed during my pregnancy. And so my daughter was substance exposed. And at this time, my daughter, because of some really terrible medical care, I was denied antibiotics and subsequently got an infection and had to deliver by emergency C-section at 25 weeks, which is really, 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 really premature in baby time. The average, well, a full-term pregnancy is 40 weeks. So I was 25 weeks. So my daughter was born, she weighed less than 2 pounds. So while all of this was happening, this sort of work group was starting to form with the National Perinatal Association. And we started working on this family toolkit. You know, it was going to be an interdisciplinary toolkit where we were using, like working and collaborating with people from the family regulation systems and the legal side and neonatologists and clinicians and basically anybody who works with that population. We were bringing in, you know, my lived experience and sort of having just gone through the process of having went through that system. And at the time I had just delivered my daughter, who we were in right in the middle of 106 day NICU stay. So So as we were writing the toolkit and developing the toolkit, I was actually in the hospital with my daughter. And so we wrote the toolkit and submitted a draft to the National Perinatal Association. We, Dr. Carl Hart, who I'm not sure if you're aware of who he is, but he recently published a book. He's written two, but the most recently, he's a Columbia University professor who's done a lot of work around substance use disorders and reward systems. And he just came out with a book called Drug Use for Grownups. And he outed himself as a recreational heroin user. He's a Black man who is a Columbia University professor. So kind of interesting. But anyways, so we had this conference, submitted this draft, and it turned out that NPA kind of felt like we were being a bit too radical using a harm reduction lens. So we kind of regrouped and kind of sat on the draft that we had. And then some colleagues from the National Harm Reduction Coalition approached us and asked, you know, if we would, we could rewrite the toolkit because the New York State Department of Health was looking for a toolkit. And so we joined up with the National Harm Reduction Coalition and kind of developed another draft with them. And this is all over a period of like 5 years. And we decided, yeah, well, maybe we should become a company. So so our mission is to improve the lives of pregnant and parenting people who use drugs and to, you know, provide equitable health information to both clinicians and providers and pregnant and parenting people themselves, you know. And so, yeah, so the toolkit is sort of a comprehensive guide for consumers and providers that has everything that you kind of want to know about what you might encounter with through a harm reduction lens. You know, so it talks about you know, different types of substances. It talks about and how they might or might not impact your pregnancy, how to reduce your use, prenatal care, trauma-informed care, how to talk to your providers. It's a really awesome, huge, huge document that's being, right now we're working on translation in lots of different languages. And we're just, our goal is to kind of make lives better and hopefully change policy and educate people and improve services that already exist. Like, you know, within the harm reduction community, people who use drugs that are parents or pregnant are probably some of the most stigmatized and marginalized, even amongst drug users themselves. And so one of the things that we're trying to develop right now is partnering with mail order syringe access program called Next Distro to provide services specifically for this population, because they people who use drugs that are pregnant often stop accessing services because it's a complicated relationship with service providers and mandatory reporting laws and things like that.
That was from my conversation with Rhea Sinas, a harm reduction activist and co-founder of the Academy of Perinatal Harm Reduction. Find them on the web at perinatalharmreduction.org. And for now, that's it. Thank you, folks, for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is produced for the Drug Truth Network and distributed by the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network. Please, support your local community and public radio stations. Become a member today. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.